It's time for the big interview on today's show, and we're going to be talking high yield investing with Paul DeLugosh. He is portfolio manager at the Buffalo High Yield Fund. It's ticker symbol BUFHX if you're looking to follow along at home. And if you want to get more information on the firm and the funds, go to buffalofunds.com. Paul DeLugosh, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
It's great to be here.
Guests on Money Life appear via the Gainbridge hotline. Are you taking steps towards planning your financial future? A deferred tax annuity from Gainbridge may be a great building block for your budding retirement portfolio. Learn how annuities through Gainbridge protect your savings while also delivering guaranteed returns. Visit Gainbridge.life today. Paul, I want to start with just a little bit of the state of high yield, because high yield bonds, people hear bonds, they're thinking one thing, but high yield always more correlated to the stock market than the rest of the bond market. Right now, correlation to the stock market is ugly because the market has been tanking. So help us understand where high yield is in this squeeze of higher rates, higher inflation, bad market.
So, Chuck, it's basically been high yield, I would say, is often one of the worst starts in memory. It's declined every month so far this year. The decline has kind of been due to the elevated inflation, the change in the rate expectations from the Federal Reserve. And now more recently, I would say people are getting a little more concerned about the outlook on earnings in the back half of the year. So across all credit ratings within high yield, which would be double B, single B, and triple C, they're all negative year to date. I would say the double Bs initially took the brunt of the hit because of the spread widening, more from the rate increases associated with the change in the rate structure. And then the single Bs and the triple Cs followed thereafter. So to date, they're all negative. I would say part of that is, you know, rates have been extremely low for an extremely long period of time, and so there's probably a bit of complacency, and now things are kind of being re-rated, and I would say a lot of the interest rate risk is already in the market at this point.
If we're winding up seeing high-yield bonds getting hammered by the market, well, in the stocks, if you say that something's oversold, you wind up saying that means that it's a buying opportunity. Is this a buying opportunity? I mean, for you, is this a case where on the one hand, you don't like the beating that you're taking, but on the other hand, you believe you're going to deliver a beating back to the market down the line?
Yeah, so I would say we're being a little, clearly things are more appealing than they were at the beginning of the year in terms of yields and return, prospective returns for investors. The hardest part right now, or the dynamic, the tug and pull going on right now in the market is the outlook for the back half of the year for earnings and whether or not we'll see a recession. So the market's kind of always forward looking. So it's the back half of the year and kind of into 2023. Will there be a recession? If there is a recession, there's going to be spread widening, which will mean prices will go down in high yield. So returns will continue to be negative. So I think that's the thing that everyone's looking at right now is, you know, how stable are, you know, how strong are the earnings going to be in the back half of the year? And I think we're beginning to see, after listening to the first quarter call, that there's a lot of firms that are beginning to get a little bit nervous and with their confidence of how strong earnings will be in the back half of the year. So I think that is also guiding down, you know, is making people a little bit uneasy about how much risk they're willing to take.
With most managers who I talk high yield, we're talking high yield pretty theoretically, but I know that you are willing to talk about some issues and some companies that you're looking at, et cetera. So you've said more than once that the earnings picture is super important as we get towards the end of the year. It sounds like from a high yield perspective, the earnings picture may be more important than the rate picture and the inflation picture. But I want you to help us put this into perspective. Talk about a company or two, an issue or two, where you're looking right now and here's the picture. Help us understand what's a high yield bond that you're interested in, maybe you want to be owning, versus one that's maybe not the kind of thing you want to be getting into in these times.
Sure. So, for example, one company that we've owned and that, you know, we're still interested in owning is Teva, which is a generic manufacturer, Teva Pharmaceuticals. So we've looked at they have a lot of bonds outstanding. They're one of the largest manufacturers of generic drugs in the United States. And they also have a smaller branded portfolio of drugs, as well as some, they're active in the biosimilar markets. The notes that we've been, you know, more interested on are, so one way to kind of mitigate some of the rising interest rate risk is to shorten up the duration in the portfolio. So, for example, Teva is a name that we like because of their market share they also generate a significant amount of free cash flow. So the past few years, they've been generating about $2 billion of free cash flow. And management has been telling the market that they're basically focused on taking all of that free cash flow and paying down debt. Their leverage basically, you know, at the end of the first quarter was about 4.3 times. They've stated they'd like to get this down to the about 3 times by the end of 2023, in which case they'll reevaluate the company's leverage targets going forward. So we think that's a pretty – it's also in a, I would say, recession-resistant industry. So it's healthcare. So people typically are going to take their pharmaceutical drugs in good times and in bad. It's also primarily focused on generics. So that's also a low-cost opportunity within the healthcare space. And then I would say the only thing, you know, the hardest part about this company is they were caught up a little bit in this opioid, you know, epidemic and settlement. They were recently stated that, you know, they're looking to solve this in the last quarter, that, you know, hopefully they might have something done by the end of the year. The market hates uncertainty, so the litigation overhang makes people a little bit nervous. But we think they're going to get through it. The outcome will not be as severe as, you know, maybe worst case scenario, and they'll continue to delever with that free cash flow. So that's, you know, one example of a name where we think that, you know, you can stay, you know, relatively short duration, pick up, you know, roughly 7% yield, and, you know, it's a double B rated company, so pretty high quality company.
So that gives us an example of what you're buying. Tell us something where that maybe you had to move away from. Help us understand why in this environment there are certain things that you're moving away from.
The ones we kind of move away from are names that have a little bit more uncertainty and structural uncertainty around them. So, for example, a company like Bausch Healthcare, where they had historically had the eye care business, which is pretty resilient and a very good business. They also had their drug portfolio, which generated a lot of free cash flow. But in the recent times, they've kind of, you know, gone through and they're splitting the company into three. The existing company, where a lot of the debt was held, is not going to have the security of the cash flows associated with the eye care business. Given, you know, the market right now, it does not like anything with uncertainty associated with it. So there's a name where, you know, we've kind of moved away from, just given the uncertainty associated with what the existing business cash flows are going to look like going forward. They also have one drug, which is, you know, facing a lot of patent litigation, and we're a little uncertain as to how that'll play out. So there's a name where going into it, the leverage is higher to start with. And if litigation were to go negatively, we have a much less conviction in the cash flows going forward.
The other thing I found interesting is that when I asked you for an example, you went towards Teva, but you didn't just jump towards oil and gas. One thing I keep hearing is that right about now, if you're in high yield, oil and gas are certainly favorable in the high yield space. So explain why oil and gas right now for high yield is a sweet spot and how you're rejiggering the portfolio if you are towards that.
To be fair, historically, we've been underweight energy in our portfolio for a long period of time. And that historically had been due to our inability to predict commodity prices. We never felt a lot of confidence in terms of direction of where they were going. Furthermore, the management teams within the energy space had a pretty poor track record of capital allocation that typically resulted in them spending more than they earned. And as a result, the balance sheets were always a little bit stretched and companies were always having to access capital. And accessing capital is fine when things are great, but when things aren't so great, then your balance sheet becomes stretched even more and you're relying on the kindness of strangers to finance that cash shortfall. In 2021, we finally began to see a change in management teams' perspective on how they were going to allocate capital going forward. Now, this is probably a reflection of oil prices could come down significantly for a couple of years, and so they were having to live within their means. I think also investors, both on the equity and debt side, were telling that they had to spend within their cash flow generation going forward. So the management teams began to take on a little bit more conservative approach around capital allocation and began to really focus on their balance sheet and reducing debt. At the same time, kind of in, you know, later 2020, going into 2021, the Biden administration came in and their policies towards fossil fuels were probably maybe a little bit less friendly than prior administrations. And so the management teams began to probably get a little concerned about their access to capital in the debt and equity markets because the transition towards EV was kind of underway and no one knew how fast this transition was going to take. So when we made these, we started to get interest in make some of these investments in energy in the back half of throughout 2021. It was primarily because we saw the management teams were taking on a different tone. The underlying base, the ability to make money at, $60 to $70 we thought was pretty reasonable. The hedge books were decent at the time. So we felt pretty comfortable that, at this point in time, managements were getting religion and, and so they would be able to generate the free cash flow to service their debt. Now, obviously, we had no ability to forecast the war in the Ukraine and between Russia and the Ukraine, which has had a significant impact on prices. So now, we thought that these models would generate a decent amount of free cash flow at, 60 to 70. Obviously, at 100, they're generating an enormous amount of free cash flow. So the hardest part right now, I would say, is a lot of the upside in the bonds is already reflected in the company. So the hardest part right now is just trying to determine how much upside is left. Now, with that said, the energy space, a lot of the companies that we're invested in, the leverage metrics are down to 1x or less. So now there's a transition for these management teams. We're going to see, if they stick to their knitting and they maintain their balance sheets or if they start to return more money to shareholders. So we have noticed that, some are being, transition to a little bit more shareholder returns. And so we're just going to have to monitor that. And, if it's, a small amount, I guess we're okay with it. The larger amounts, we're going to get a little bit more nervous about it, and we'll probably look to transition to other spaces.
And in terms of what all of that does to the fund, I mean, any high yield fund can have its measures of volatility, et cetera. But yours is a fund. It's a 5-star fund, as according to Morningstar. It has typically sort of avoided the extremes. It's not that it doesn't get all the way to the top or all the way to the bottom, but it has typically sort of been, above average and not too far below average. When you make a change like that, what does it do for the performance dynamics of the fund? Should an investor who's with you expect the fund to perform roughly the same as it always has, or does that change performance expectations?
Well, the performance expectations, I would say, we're probably if we sell energy, the yield, so it's finding things that have comparable, or better risk return profiles versus what we have in energy right now. So that will just be dependent upon what other opportunities we find within the portfolio. I think the other hard part, the unknown with energy, obviously, is, what our price is going to do, 6-12 months from here. So if we were to right now sell energy and reinvest in something else, if energy prices roll over, clearly the new investments I would think would probably do better. If energy hangs in there, given where the yields on some of these energy bonds are, energy may continue to outperform. But we're probably looking at reducing a little bit of it just because it's had such a good run. And in fairness, we didn't have a lot of foresight going into, where energy prices are and where they're going to go. So we still think that they are, in good shape. That's the one thing about the energy companies right now is the balance sheets are all, have been delevered and they're down to kind of 1x, which is, I would say, probably as good as it gets for a lot of these energy companies, at least in the last 5 years. The question really becomes, when it comes to the free cash flow they're generating, will they allocate that, continue to pay down debt, or will more and more of it start to go to shareholders? And will the balance sheets once again kind of take a back seat? So going back to your question, it really kind of depends on the outlook for energy. How it plays out. If energy prices stay high, I would assume energy will continue to do well. And to the extent we were to take a little bit off the table, I would assume that it would go into something probably that doesn't have the return profile. So it'll be a little less risky, but probably not as much return.
Last question very quickly, because we're almost out of time. I mentioned you focused on earnings. You mentioned it a couple of times. To you, in terms of how high yield plays out the rest of the year, is it going to be the inflation picture, the rising rate picture, or the earnings picture that most determines how you and I would be viewing 2022 for high yield when we get to the end of the year?
So my gut feeling is it's probably going to be more earnings towards the second half of the year. I'm hopeful, but I would be the first to admit I do not know where inflation is going to end up going. But I think it's going to be at the high end of where it is right now, and I would assume it's kind of peaking out is kind of how I'm looking at it right now. So I think the rate component is already priced into the market. Now, the earnings part of it, I don't think is priced into the market. So if earnings were to really soften in the back half of the year, that's where I think spreads could widen out. and prices would obviously go down at that point. So the earnings component, I think, is really what you're going to see in the second half of the year. And if earnings can hang in there, then I think, you know, high yield will hang in there for the remainder of the year. If earnings fall apart in the back half of the year, then I think high yield probably has a little bit more downside to go.
Paul, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. I hope we get a chance to talk again sometime.
Absolutely, Chuck. Sounds great.
That's Paul DeLugosh. He is portfolio manager for the Buffalo High Yield Fund, BUFHX, a 5-star fund by Morningstar. You can get more information at buffalofunds.com. We're going to come back, wrap up today's show, and let you know all about what's coming as Money Life goes to Morningstar for the next couple of days. So stick around. We'll wrap things up in just a moment.